Well, if you were around in the early 80s, you know the significance of that song, the first song played on MTV Music Television. And up next with us, the first VJ you saw on MTV. We're pleased to be joined by original VJ, Alan Hunter. Alan, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Rich, it's so good to be here on what I thought was actually the, 1,175th show. I thought it was the 76th show, but
I lose track sometimes. Yeah, well, who wasn't? My goodness gracious. Now, I had somebody tell me here at the station, they're pretty sure you were here in Bangor introducing Hall & Oates on the Big Bam Boom Tour. Do you remember that?
That's so funny. I've been to Bangor twice. The first time I went was taking a trip up mid-80s sometime just to sort of visit the area. And we stopped in some lobster house. Can you imagine they had a few of those up there? I think it was the fall. And that was the first time I ever ate a big, like a whole lobster. I come from landlocked Alabama, where Red Lobster was where you got a lobster tail. So to sit there at this cool little, you know, probably called Lobster Inn, I don't know, and they set before me a huge, like, whole lobster, give me a bib and a cracker, and say, go at it. I had no idea.
There you go. Well, that's what...
Like, really? You crack these things open?
Yeah, who would think to do that? That's why they were so big, you know, when the first European settlers got here. You may not know this. Those suckers were about 6 to 8 feet in size because nobody had ever eaten them before.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's like an alligator size.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, I didn't know what to do because then, you know, lobster to me was just a little white, fluffy bit of meat, a little tail, disembodied from everything else. Like I'm supposed to crack open the thorax. So that was a real sweater for me. But yeah, I think I came back maybe a year or two later for the Big Bam Boom Tour, and did not get the tour around Bangor at that point. Kind of flew in and flew out, but it was good the two times I came.
Well, excellent. Well, you can count this as a third time today, even though it's just over the phone.
I'm feeling the vibe. Is there snow on the ground yet?
Not yet, but any day now, I'm sure. I want to talk
a
little
bit in Chicago, so there's a little nip in the air.
Oh yeah, you know. I want to talk a little bit about your background. People may not be aware that before you got to MTV, you were an actor. You had studied at Circle in the Square, and is this right? You acted with Raymond Burr, Perry Mason.
Actually, before I got to New York, I had a gig in college. An NBC movie of the week was filming down in Natchez, Mississippi. I went to school in Jackson, Mississippi. And there was a call out for, you know, locals to come and audition for bit parts in this MOW. And I got the bit part of a wounded soldier. It was called To Heal a Nation, this cheesy Civil War movie. And I made my speech to Raymond Burr. I call it the pivotal point in the movie. And so that was my first acting role. And that's how I got my Screen Actors Guild card when I finally came to New York. So that was my first bit in the acting world.
Now, where did you run into Bob Pittman and to begin the process of getting to MTV?
It's a long and terrible story, although I heard the Bangor falls and winters are long. Maybe you've got time.
We have time. Oh, yes.
When people say, how do you get into the business, whether it's entertainment or music or acting, I say, you know, there's definitely 90% luck. There's 5% of just being in the right place at the right time. And I moved to New York, went to drama school at Circle in the Square, did all the things you would do to kind of prep a career as an actor. And in New York in 1980, you know, you could actually go and live there and struggle to be an actor. Nowadays, you can't do that. But I was at a picnic in New York's Central Park for people born, bred, or educated in Mississippi. I'm an Alabama boy, went to college in Mississippi, so I went to this event. Saw a lot of old pals and some new ones. Bob Pittman is from Mississippi, and he shows up with his second-in-command, John Sykes. I was introduced to him. He said he was doing this new thing or going to start this new channel. It was going to play videos 24/7. I said, well, that's funny. I'm just a struggling actor. I just did an off Broadway production of Midsummer Night's Dream, some new wave punk rock version of it. His eyes rolled back at his head. But I'd just been in a David Bowie video for Fashion. So, and it had just played on Midnight Special. You remember with Wolfman?
Oh, sure.
So I said, I know what videos are, but I mean, you're going to play them 24/7? That's weird. And he said, well, we hope not. We hope it'll work. I didn't talk any more about it. He didn't say anything to me. 2 days later, I got a call from the executive producer saying that Bob had run into you and wants you to come down and audition. And I was like, for what? It wasn't called. You know, this is probably 2 months prior to MTV launching, the midsummer of 1981. And they hadn't named it MTV. There was no name for it at that point. So I went down. I auditioned. It was terrible. At least I thought it was. They called me back a couple of days later for a second, I think even worse audition. And then finally, I told my wife at the time, there's no way they're calling me back. So a third time they called me back, I'm not sure it was measurably better. But they must have been desperate. They were coming down to the wire. They had hired Mark Goodman and Nina and JJ, I think Martha, around the same time as me. And they said, look, we just got to go with somebody. We need five, and that boy next door, we'll fire him a few months into the gig, but let's just get this thing going.
So
that's my humble appraisal of how it went down.
How far into it did you all start to get the idea that this thing was going to catch on the way it did?
You know, from the very beginning, I mean, my fun story is that I kept my bartending job for a month or two into the gig. I would literally go to the studio by day, do my job at MTV, and then I would bartend at night because I didn't know, you know, how long it was going to last. All of us had no clue because it wasn't playing in Manhattan where we all lived and did the show. And so, you know, 3 months into it, we're all still wondering, you know, what is this thing? We weren't really able to watch it live in our apartments in New York. People in New Jersey were able to see it. But once we started going out on promotional appearances, you know, 6 months into the gig, they would fly us to, you know, Toledo, Ohio, to a record store appearance. And 1,000 kids would show up because, you know, Middle America was getting MTV on their cable systems when the big markets were not that first year. And they were going crazy for MTV. We would come back with those stories. We'd get into the studio and I'd go up to Martha and go, you won't believe how many people showed up at this appearance. And I was like, oh, my God, this thing might work. So 6-7 months into it, we began to get a feel that people all over America who weren't getting the music they, you know, they were hearing music on MTV they had never heard before, and they were calling up the cable stations, I want my MTV, and they were calling up the local you know, record stores asking if they had the Stray Cats or Duran Duran, and we saw it start to take off within that 6 month period. I still didn't feel secure in my job, though. I wanted to go back to my bartending. I was making pennies. I was already starting to live beyond my means.
Well, yeah.
For 6 months.
We're talking with Alan Hunter here on Downtown. You and I are about the same vintage. I was doing radio, but also going to college at the time, and it immediately changed the way people consumed music and the type of music. New artists appeared out of nowhere because they were able to come up with some great videos, and you had a chance to interview so many incredibly talented people, from Madonna to Ozzy, Lou Reed, Robin Williams.
Yeah.
From all of those, who stood out as either the most interesting or maybe even the most bizarre?
Well, there was tons of all of those. The most bizarre would be Ozzy Osbourne, who came into the studio, and I was a huge Black Sabbath fan. And he came in stuttering and seemed incoherent. Sharon, his wife manager at the time, was, you know, saying, Ozzy's a little bit under the weather. He's a cold, he said. He's taking medicine.
Sharon!
Yeah, we know the story. But I had prepped for this interview like you do, and I was totally jazzed. And my first question, I got an answer back that no one understood. He just kind of stuttered along, and my producer came over and whispered in my ear, just do the best you can, you know? So I hung in there for that. You know, look, there were so many memorable interviews, maybe even beyond the music world. I got to interview Robin Williams. He was my hero. And when his movie Moscow on the Hudson came out, he came on to the set at MTV, because MTV started to become kind of the epicenter of all things entertainment,
right?
Just music, you know. Tom Cruise would come on and promote Risky Business. Ghostbusters and Dan Aykroyd and I got to know each other during that period. I got to meet Andy Warhol and interview him. So aside from great interviews with, you know, at Live Aid, with a sort of pissed off Robert Plant and a very drunk Jimmy Page, along with a bewildered Phil Collins after that debacle of a performance. I got to interview them. So it was kind of fun to be right in kind of the epicenter of what was going on at the time. MTV was the place everybody wanted to come.
Well, including wrestlers. You guys got tied in closely, and you perhaps more than anybody with the WWF.
Sure. Well, that was a very bizarre thing. Certainly, Cindy came along with her fun style and hooked up via her manager, David, with the wrestling world. Captain Lou Albano was in her first video. So
right.
It was some natural dovetail between her and the wrestling world, and MTV jumped on board that. I mean, it was a perfect, you know, venue to have that whole rock and wrestling thing. And they threw yours truly into the mix because I like doing that man in the street crazy stuff. You know, then we're going to put Martha Quinn in the middle of that kind of craziness. So yours truly went down there with Gene Okerlund.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Wrestling. Yeah, that was a weird time. Those people are nuts, those wrestlers, for sure. And I got to see that most of the time the blood was real. Scary. Scary but fun. Another one of those stunt things that MTV was so good at doing. You know, before the audience had a chance to breathe and catch up with MTV, they were always moving on to sort of the next thing, you know, whether it was Live Aid, social consciousness, or it was goofy stuff, or the MTV Music Awards, or just, you know, the graphics on MTV were always edgy, cool. So it's a fun environment.
I want to talk about what you're doing at SiriusXM, but also I want to touch on your work outside of that, along with your brother. Hunter Films has been a very successful house. You've had an Oscar-nominated film, and you've really had a chance to produce some terrific movies through that.
Well, thank you. I would probably tittle with your phrase, successful. I wouldn't say I made tons of money in the film business, but when I moved away a few years back, kind of away from the Hollywood scene, you know, I was struggling to be, you know, do my gigs after my MTV years were that period that every talent experiences, which is the ups and downs of the business. So to take a little more control of my life, I opened up a film company with a brother. We did a bunch of really good work. I'm proud of our independent work. The Oscar nom was cool. We didn't make a whole lot of money in that business because it's called independent film. That's like running a nonprofit. You're not meant to make money. But that was that second phase of my life where I, you know, was taking control of my own thing. I was being a producer and tons of fun. My third phase now is living in Chicago with my wife, who has gotten her PhD, and I'm following a good woman to the Windy City, and still looking to then get back into television projects and to film projects. Now that she's a doctor, I can breathe again.
There you go. Yeah, and doing
different phases of our careers.
Exactly, and doing the gig on SiriusXM 80s on 8. Love listening to it, hearing almost all of you there now. And boy, it's great to hear it, and the memories and the stories are so great as well. What prompted you to want to do that? Obviously, the money, sure, but to revisit that time in your life.
Well, again, it's kind of funny when things come at you. It's sort of like that old line about love: when you least expect it, you know, it comes tapping on your shoulder. That's the same with a lot of circumstances in my life. When I've been aiming at something else comes along. I wanted to be an actor, and I get tapped to be a host of a music television show. Who would have thunk? But I rode that wave. I got a call a little over 10 years ago, early in SiriusXM. At that time, it was Sirius and XM, two different companies. I got a call from a guy in my office. He called my office and left a bunch of messages during a week. Hey, this is Kid Kelly from Sirius Radio. And I get calls from radio people a lot to do their shows. Some guy up in Bangor, Maine called me and asked me to be on his radio show.
Crazy.
WKIT or something. Can you believe that? His name was Rich.
Oh,
weird.
That guy's awful.
But so I kept thinking he was saying he was with some, he was Sirius in radio or something. I didn't even know it was the satellite company. And finally, once I had spoken to him, oh, you mean satellite radio? Yeah, I get it. But I didn't have it, so I didn't know. Look, they asked me to be a part of it. They asked me if I could give them Mark, Nina, and Martha's numbers so they could call them. They wanted to get all four of us. And it was kind of the absolute mirror of what we did on MTV. We introduced bands. And we talked and, you know, told some anecdotes, and I could do it in the comfort of my you know, my home studio in my pajamas, and I thought, this is great. I don't have to put on makeup. So that was the real that was the real killer there. But it also allowed me to do other things, to continue my production stuff. And it's gone on longer than I ever thought. I can't believe that I've had this job for over 10 years. That's the longest gig I've ever had, which is so bizarre.
What's changed in the music business?
But it's allowed.
What's changed from your perspective in the music business? I mean, you guys were breaking new artists on MTV in the day, but these days, all these new outlets, internet opportunities, the record company's importance, maybe not what it used to be, is all of this good for music consumers?
Well, I think we're going through a transition, and that the digital streaming world has certainly been, has depressed artist wages over the past few years, but obviously was an inevitable thing. That artists wouldn't be slaves to a mega corporation to distribute their music. The pain of having to do it yourself, to not be a part of as big a kiosk as a major record company, and having your own website back in the day, of course, when we had MySpace, MySpace. You know, that was a transition, and I think it's getting better. They just had some recent legislation that went through that the artists are very happy about, you know, in terms of the residuals. I'm very hopeful for it. I think there's a lot more stuff out there, just like in entertainment in general. 1 billion TV channels with 1 billion shows. To me, there's still the same number of good quality shows. There's just a lot more stuff to weed through. Same in the music business. I think you got the same number of, you know, the same amount of cream, just a lot more stuff.
Ain't that the truth?
How the audience weeds through it. They listen to your station, and you curate the kind of music that you guys want to curate. And I like your eclectic palette, by the way.
Thank you.
How do my young kids find new music? They listen to it on Sirius. They find it on the internet or a local radio station. There's just a lot more outlets, but I think bands are having to rely obviously more on playing live. Not about selling CD units anymore, is it? Unless you're Beyonce and Lady Gaga and you're literally moving digital, normally copies of music, then it's about playing live. That's a benefit to the audience, I think. To the bands, they got to work a little harder, but I think it's more satisfying.
Alan Hunter.
I don't know if we're at the end of the transition or at the beginning of it, but I think times are good.
We'll find out. Alan Hunter, you hear him on Sirius XM Radio. Get the book as well, VJ, The Unplugged Adventures of MTV's First Wave. Follow Alan on Twitter. You're a great follow at Alan Hunter MTV.
Oh, thank you so much, man, and I love what you're doing up there. I'd listened to the show here before I came on. Good. Sounds good.
Well, thanks. Hey, I appreciate you coming on with us. Continued success and good health to you, and hopefully we'll catch up with you again down the road.
Yes, sir. I'm going to go get me a lobster now.
All right. That sounds good. We'll send one your way. Thanks, Alan.
Later, man.
That is Alan Hunter, Sirius XM Radio, and, of course, original MTV VJ joining us here on Downtown.